Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 3. I'm your host, Libya. And this week, we have with us Malcolm. Go ahead and introduce yourself, Malcolm.
Hello, I'm Malcolm from sunny Las Vegas. I'm a programmer, a writer, a journalist, an 80s breakdancer, and I'm also Libya's cousin.
Woohoo! this week, we have some news. In casting news for pilots, it's pilot season, most of you guys know, but... one of the pilots we talked about last week was The Rockford Files, and this week, Beau Bridges from Stargate has been cast. And also, I just want to remind you guys that John Barrowman's episode, well, by the time this comes out, it would have already aired, but John Barrowman's episode starts on Sunday, so look for that. Game of Thrones is also casting for their pilot. It's been picked up for a full series for HBO. And in case you don't know about it, Game of Thrones is based on a series of books by George R.R. Martin, which are fantastic. They're some of the best novels that are out there, fantasy novels. And so I'm really excited. They're shooting this thing in Ireland so that they can do it in a real castle. And the whole cast is all British actors, which, you know, I happen to like my British actors, so I'm kind of excited about that. And I think I just said Sean Bean from Lord of the Rings is the lead. So, but we have until next spring for that to premiere. But they're shooting, they finished shooting the pilot, and now they're going on and shooting for the rest of the series. And I think that's all my news. You got any news?
Yes. Most of it is all space, but I have a little ground-based stuff to start off with. IGN TV reported that James Marsters is going to be guest starring on Hawaii Five-0. He's going to be playing the bad guy in the pilot. There's going to be some more campfire-worthy people on that cast, like Battlestar's Grace Park, you know, Boomer, Daniel Day-Kim from Lost, and playing lead, Jack McGarrett, is going to be Alex O'Loughlin from Moonlight. Not to be confused with Moonlighting, we miss you, David Addison. Sci-Fi is happy with Caprica, so says The Hollywood Reporter. They like the ratings, including its PVR numbers. They are so pleased that Mark Stern said that they're going to be looking for ways to spin Battlestar off beyond Caprica.
Oh, you gotta be kidding me.
Say that, yeah, that they're going to be sitting down with Ron Moore and his team, and it's not necessarily going to be a traditional series. According to Entertainment Weekly, the possibles for the role of Captain America in the upcoming Captain America movie are G.I. Joe's Channing Tatum, Cruel Intentions, Ryan Phillippe, the Fantastic Flops, Human Torch, a.k.a. Chris Evans, Cloverfield's Mike Vogel, Gossip Girl's Sebastian Stan, or as you remember him, Jack Benjamin from King, and the unknown from Young and the Restless, Wilson Bethel, who, according to IGN, stated that he's no longer up for the role. So considering that they're not mentioned as possibles, Chuck's Captain Awesome, Ryan McPartland, and Supernatural's Dean Jensen Eccles himself are not going to be in. Also, The Hollywood Reporter later on said that inside sources were saying that Chris Evans has been offered the role. So if that's true, so. Finally, there's still no word on the live-action Star Wars TV show, but Lucasfilm seems to be creating another animated series. That little tidbit is from IESB.net, who described the new show's demographic as preschool to kindergarten-age children. So I guess Jar Jar is a lot. That show's working title is Squishies. That's all I got.
I'm impressed you were prepared for this podcast.
Seeing that journalism degree is coming in handy.
All right, well, normally we start off the podcast with a Monday because, quite frankly, I don't watch any Sunday television. However, that has changed because HBO just premiered the pilot of The Pacific, which is sort of the continuation of Band of Brothers, except that it's not because it doesn't have any of the cast from Band of Brothers, but it's the same theme. So it's the war in the Pacific, and it's all new people, and we watch them from the beginning. And I have to say, one of the things that did you watch it at all?
I did not. I figured I should wait until I watched Band of Brothers, and then I'll watch The Pacific.
I don't know. I don't think you necessarily need to have one for the other because it's told in a similar kind of way, But there's no crossover whatsoever. I mean, none of the same characters, because they're literally fighting on opposite points of the world. But one thing I didn't realize when they're talking about in the Pacific is that it was basically the Army and the Air Force that fought in Europe, and it was the Navy and the Marines that fought in the Pacific. And they made that distinction, and I was like, really? I was like, there were no Marines in Europe? I mean, at least that's what they indicated in the pilot. Now I have to. The thing I love about the show is once you start watching it and you see all this stuff, because they literally interview soldiers who were there at the beginning. The guys just start talking about their experience, and then you kind of go into the episode, and the characters that are in the episode are based on real people, based on their stories. So that's what I find really fascinating about the show, and it makes you want to study history and stuff like that after you watch it, and it's realistic and it's brutal, but definitely well worth your time. It's a class A show. So, okay. So now to Monday. Chuck. So this episode this week was fantastic. They basically, I mean, they did the big reveal with Morgan last week, but this week it felt like they were like the show was ending or something. They totally just changed everything. Everything turned up on its head, you know?
I'm so glad that Morgan knows. So I was really glad that they even kind of built on that a little bit this episode, so we got to see Morgan take advantage of his knowledge a little bit.
Well, he also got taken advantage of, but I was happy that we got to see Casey, a story that was centered around him, because in the we're in like towards the end of season, well, middle to end of season three, and this is, I think, the first Casey-centric story that I can think
Well,
of.
they had that one where they revealed about his sensei. They had that one. They even talked
That's,
about that a little bit
yeah,
on this
okay,
one.
yeah, you're right, you're right. I remember that. But this one really, it felt very personal to him. I mean, in the sensei one too, because he felt betrayed. And this one was similar. Apparently, every teacher that he's ever had was actually evil.
Exactly.
So, and oh man, when they stripped him of his rank, that was like so painful to watch. But
Yeah, they had me worried. I thought they were changing the dynamic of the show. I thought he was going to be total villain.
I don't know what they're, and that's the thing, is I have no idea what they're doing right now. I mean, they've stripped Casey of his rank. He's no longer part of the team, and Sarah's supposedly considering a job in DC, which I really don't buy. Like, I don't really believe that she's going to move to DC, but they're doing something, and I'm not quite sure what it is. But that's interesting. It's keeping us on our toes, and it gets, you know, you really excited about the show. All right.
I like who his love interest turned out to be. I love that actress.
Oh, you mean Casey's?
Yes.
I don't think I
She's
recognize her.
on a show called Crash from Stars, which I guess her character's not on there anymore. That's why I stopped watching it.
Oh, yeah, I didn't recognize her, so I guess that means we're going to get to see her again. I mean, you kind of assume that since you get the reveal that there's a daughter.
Right.
So, the next show, you got any more Chuck comment?
No. I was just happy to see her, pretty much. I was hoping for some more into Casey's background, but, you know, I guess we're going to get some more later.
Yeah, I think he's the most, I would almost say, underdeveloped character. I mean, we've gotten more background on the guys that work at the Bymore. So, it's actually really good that we're finally getting to see some more about him, because because the less backstory we get, I just basically think of him as Jane, and he works at the Bymore. And for some reason, he is no longer on Serenity, and he is a CIA agent. If you don't give us that background, you kind of fill it in. All right, the next show is House. What you think?
Oh, I didn't watch House.
Aw,
not one of my two.
I thought you said you were gonna watch. You know what? I watched it because I thought you were like, oh, I gotta watch House. All right, well, I'll get a quick one. You watched 24, right?
Nope, don't watch 24. 24.
And you're going to have to be fired.
I'm really behind on 24.
Well, I mean, I think everybody I know is really behind on 24, and some people I know have actually given up on it. And I watched it, but this week's episode, actually, I have to say, it ended in a nice cliffhanger, except that I've actually seen them do this before. It's the, they pull the maneuver where they basically take out Jack's support system. And they're like, oh, it's the biggest cliffhanger you've ever seen. I was like, except when they did it in season 2, and when they did it in season 3, and when they did it. Because, you know, like, in all those other seasons, they'll have somebody show up at CTU. One time they had somebody show up at CTU and blow them up. Another time they had somebody have a virus in CTU, and everybody just dropped dead. And both of those times, then all of a sudden Jack is on his own. This time, they had somebody drive up and set off an EMP. So now, all their computers are toast. And they were like, they knew that they had an EMP, and they're like, shut down the system. And he's like, it's not enough time. I was like, sure there is. But actually, there wasn't. There was like 10 seconds. But so the EMP goes off at the end of the episode, and Jack's like, Chloe, Chloe, are you there? And it's like, next week, Jack is on his own. And I'm like, yeah, we've seen this. So I kind of feel like 24 doesn't really have anything fresh anymore. And every surprise that they have, you've seen it. Especially if you've kept up and have watched all the other seasons. There's really not a lot of new stuff that they've pulled. So it's usually just variations on the theme, so I kind of understand why people have slowed up in their watching. What's actually surprising to me is that Fox, well, it's not that surprising. Fox has decided that this is probably going to be the last season of 24, but NBC, in their desperation for content, is bidding on bringing 24 to NBC. And I'm like, why would you bring on a show that is in its 8th season and the reason it's being canceled is because people have stopped watching it? But whatever. NBC is, as we have seen, are geniuses.
It'll be better than that hospital show that they've got.
What, Trauma? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, do you watch it? Do you want to comment on it? Or you just don't want... Okay, so we will not comment on Trauma.
Right.
House this week was... trying to remember what happened. I said this last week that I never remember the patient of the week, and I think that holds true again this week. I do, however, remember that the main thing that was going on was that House and Wilson were playing this furniture buying game, which I'm not exactly sure what House was trying to prove, but he was basically saying that Wilson has never bought his own furniture ever in his life. He's always been married. And so he was saying that furniture defines you. What you buy says something about your character. And the fact that Wilson has never furnished an apartment or a house in his life says that he's trying to say that Wilson doesn't know himself. And so Wilson then spends the rest of the episode trying to figure out who he is. And it ends up leading to pretty amusing scenes. It's pretty funny. But at the end of the day, what I really like was Cuddy was like... she basically was saying, well, it doesn't say anything about your character whether or not you can buy furniture. It just says, the fact that you let House manipulate you into believing that's what that means. You know, so she was like, here's an interior decorator, call her, get her to fix your apartment, done. And I found that really amusing. So there was a patient, I'm sure House fixed her, I don't know what happened. So then the next show is Tuesday. I feel like I'm talking to myself because I don't know how many shows you've watched. But the next show is NCIS, which, you know, is my one of my favorite shows. And this week was pretty
good ratings, too. That's a highly rated show. It's like number 3 this week.
Yeah, it's usually around 1 or 2. I mean, it usually gets recently when since American Idol started, it has come in number 2 behind American Idol. And its numbers haven't dropped. Like, before American Idol was on, it was getting really high ratings, and then when American Idol started, it kept the same ratings, which people were surprised about. They're like, how did they manage to do that? But it's a different audience, Because I sure don't watch American Idol, and I love NCIS. And this,
actually, I think it was number 3 on the season for the season.
Oh, the number 3 rated episode. That's pretty good. It was a good episode. It was basically they brought in. It was a jurisdiction thing. They brought in the equivalent of NCIS for the Coast Guard, which made everyone kind of chuckle. It was like the Coast Guard has detectives, like really. So that was pretty funny. And the woman that was the head of the team, she was like Gibbs Light. She's like Gibbs Jr. She's smacking her team around the back of the head. And one of the funniest moments was, you know, Abby is his is this forensic scientist goth girl, and he's always really affectionate to her. He treats her like a daughter. He's always hugging her and kissing her or whatever. And the new woman that was part of the Coast Guard, you know, they were butting heads a little bit, and finally they get to where they have a truce, and she's like, well, you know, you can call me Abby, because her name apparently was the same. And he looks at her, and he goes, no, I really can't. And that's pretty good. So that really amused me, and I think we have our last interviews. I'm going to insert those last interviews here. The first interview is with Sean Murray, who plays Timothy McGee.
Hi, I'm Livia from Weed Not Fun. How are you? Fine. We're a fan-based site, so I just wanted to say hello from the fans. The first question I have for you is, if you look at the way that your character started off and where you are now, what is the different aspects of your character?
I think McGee's gotten quite a bit more, you know, he's learned how to be much more of an agent than you know, he's involved in interrogations. He goes out. He's been through the thing that we've talked to real law enforcement about, which is, you know, if you ever actually take someone's life, you know, which McGee has done. He's gone through all that stuff. He's a much better agent. He's not quite as grungy and socially inept as he was at one time. McGee can do quite a bit.
As shown by the prison episode. Very nice.
That's right. We try to do every year we kind of progress. And the progression of the character is real important.
But as
in
many ways,
I think the writers have been real good about letting us, you know, pushing that too.
What about the McGee-Nozo relationship as far as you were very much like, your character's really much kind of like the little brother of the family. And now I think it more feels like equal brother, a little bit. Kind of, direction.
It's going in that direction. Which is not bad, because then, you know, the Tony McGee relationship is very complicated. Because, you know, everyone says, not everyone, but, you know, occasionally I get someone comes up to me and says, no, that DeNozzo's got to stop being, you know, so mean to McGee. And I'm like, McGee likes it. That's how he knows he's part of the family. That's the sibling, you know, rivalry. You know, it's part of the way it works with him. And deep down, they love each other. So that's honestly how I feel.
I feel the same way when I watch the show. I tell people it's like a family. It's a family show.
And we're actually doing an episode right now where we kind of touch on the Tony and McGee relationship and the, the oddness of it, sort of, and right where they are, and you know that they can hurt each other's feelings and miss each other and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, because we've had instances where I pulled him over a wall and he grabs me, and, you know, where Tony grabs me and says, "I love you, man." You know. So.
What about? Can you give some resolution to the whole McGee Abby thing? What the heck happened? Like, I'm really confused. I watched every episode in a row.
Right.
When did they split up? I'm very confused.
It's very ambiguous, isn't it?
Yes.
Because people ask Paulie and I that all the time, and we're never quite sure. I do like that we kind of are keeping it ambiguous, because there's jealousy there, and, you know, people ask Paulie and I that question all the time, and we always sort of have different answers for it. I think once we knew McGee was really going to be there, you know, as a permanent fixture, that behind the scenes they thought, you know, we probably want to ease up on the romance a little bit. It's just my guess. But also to me, I think it's better to pull back from that and have it quite where you're not sure.
Okay.
That's, you know.
Can you give us any clue about anything coming up? I'm sure somebody down the line asked you that question. Just give us a little something.
Yeah. Let me think of something. Something coming up. Something. Okay, well, I got one little thing for you. And then, well, this is a fan-based site, so this is for the people that watch.
Right, right.
Right. Then you guys would know. Can I talk to this?
Go ahead.
Do you mind just
go,
for a second?
Go for it.
You guys know that there was an episode earlier this season, I believe, with a polygraph girl who brought McGee in to keep retaking his polygraph just because she sort of had a crush on him. We will see the polygraph girl again.
Excellent.
That, I'll say that.
Thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Next up is Michael Weatherly, who plays Anthony DiNozzo.
They were just talking about the head slap, and I was wondering the evolution of the Gibbs-DiNozzo relationship.
Yes.
Where do you see, how do you see that developing in the future, and where do you see, how do you see it having moved?
Yeah, I mean, it's been really fun and interesting to track it so far. I think originally DiNozzo was obviously, you know, he's really young and he was trying to learn. I think when we first started the series, the story was that I'd been with Gibbs for 2 years and I was still chasing him like a little puppy. And as we moved through the first couple of seasons, it became, you know, the roles got more defined as they do. But when at the end of season two, the Caitlin Todd character was shot and it was the three of us on the rooftop and then it was just me and Gibbs, I felt a moment that really defined the two characters. For me, I knew where I was in relation to him. We'd experienced something tragic together and never spoke about it. And that's an interesting thing too, you know. So we're sort of survivors. And there have been other tragedies in the show. And I think that this year, for me, the best moment was when, after my father had come to visit, Robert Wagner came to do the episode. DiNozzo goes back to his TV father's, house, his sort of substitute father, Gibbs, and the two of them sit down like they've been doing it every Sunday for years. And he's cut the steak in half, and they don't even speak, and they just clink the glasses. And I think that kind of said it all about where these two guys are with each other now. And then, you know, this being a TV drama, I don't know what happens in the future. Hopefully I don't disappoint him and that he has to, you know, send me off into the desert. Oh, wait, no, that was last year.
Yes, that was a big boat. But what about the future? Say if you could go into the writer's room and say, I want this for my character, and you could say anything you wanted, what would that be?
Oh, yeah, I would, you know, this sounds political, but I love what they do. I wouldn't change a thing about what they do. I mean, I created a successful show, and it's been a treat. So I don't think I could. Those guys are wicked smart, you know, and I would not presume to be smarter than that room. It's a tough room.
Do you have a tease, real quick tease for us about the future of the show?
The future of the show.
As far as anything coming up.
McGee and Tony have a fight. I do know that happens.
Like a serious fight, or
there is trouble in the man manse of Tony and McGee. I'm not going to say whether or not that gets resolved, but they have a problem with each other. And also, we have towards the end of the season, I know we're going to have the return of our legal eagle, Rena Sofa. So that'll be interesting to see.
All right. Thank you very much.
And finally, Mark Harmon, who plays Leroy Jethro Gibbs. And I apologize in advance that the Mark Harmon interview is a little bit soft. So if you want to see the video interviews, remember they're on Weedonopolis.com.
Oh yeah, I guess
so. One of my favorite episodes on the show deal with Gibbs and his emotional kind of relationship about his daughter and things like that. And I saw the preview that's going to be dealt with. And I was wondering, how do you feel about those storylines versus the episodic?
You know what? I think we do all kinds of shows, and I think we could probably no more do all shows like that than we can do all the more bread and butter shows that we do. One of the really great things about working on this show is that they challenge all of us differently. it's time. Seven years into a show to be giving out some of those personal nuggets about characters, but they're well earned. They've been earned over the past six. It was very early on in the show that I realized that regardless of what I think is the best show we do or you think is the best show we do, there's a whole audience out there that will name shows that you maybe thought was the worst show we ever did and as their fans. I was in a coffee shop in Montana once, and they didn't know I was there. And there were two guys at the table talking about NCIS and talking about all their favorite shows. They were ripping off shows and names, the titles, and I was having a hard time figuring out which ones they were. But I guarantee you, the shows they were naming, none of them were my favorite. My point being is that it is a big audience. We do a bunch of different shows from different times, different kinds. Some of the shows I may prefer, and the crew may prefer, they get their game face on more for because it's the underwater show, or it's the one where Robert Wagner comes, or Jenna Rollins. Those have a little different texture.
Okay.
But it's part of the joy of this job. This job's a joy.
Well, okay.
You've had jobs that are a joy, or you haven't. And I've had them, certainly.
How have you been to Paris?
And this is one to appreciate. So, more than any, I feel fortunate to be part of it.
You almost can't help it.
I think it's important.
Thank you very much.
And we're back from those interviews. So, the next thing we have to talk about is the Justified pilot. Tell me you at least watched that, please? No?
No. You were going to try to sell me on it, though.
I'm going to sell you on watching more television. So the Justified pilot, I was not sure about this because when I saw the preview, it looked like a Western, but I was confused because it looked like it was in present day. And I wasn't sure if I was going to like it, but my policy is pretty much, especially on FX, if they have a drama, I usually try out the pilot of almost every drama just to see if it's any good. And this one was actually surprisingly pretty good. I mean, it is what it advertises. It's a guy who's a U.S. Marshal who pretty much has the sensibilities and the moral code of the Old West, but he's in present day. And what's really interesting,
that's being played by the guy from Deadwood, right?
That is correct. He is the lead from Deadwood. So he's used to the whole Western thing, I guess. But what's pretty cool is his attitude really confuses the criminals, which I find, and it leads to some really interesting points of humor. His policy is that if he draws his weapon from his holster, he will kill you. He's like very samurai that way. Like, if I draw my weapon, my sword must draw blood. And his thing is if he draws his gun, he has to kill somebody. And so that led to a really interesting scene where there was this criminal with a shotgun aimed at him, and he never drew his weapon. And I'm like, what are you doing? Because I'm like, he's a cop, you know, and this guy has a shotgun aimed at him, and he doesn't draw his gun. And he sits there and he talks to the guy and he tells him pretty much like, if he tells him, you know, do you think you can cock that shotgun and fire faster than I can draw my weapon and kill you? And he's like, if you think you can do that, then go ahead. You know, and the guy kind of thinks about it and sort of freaks out and pauses. And he ends up walking up to the guy, taking the shotgun out of his hands and like hitting him upside the head. And he has a couple of really good scenes where he outdraws a couple of criminals, mainly because nobody really practices drawing their weapon from their holster fast anymore, you know? So criminals are like, your gun's still holstered, there's no way you can grab your gun faster than I can do whatever, and he's just really fast. And I find he has a lot of charm, too, so I really like the show, so I added it to the TiVo. Yay!
Well, maybe it'll make up for that awful, awful Hitman movie that he was a part of.
Well, I didn't see that movie, so therefore it is not part of my consciousness.
All right, let's. 2 minutes of it.
I saw the preview. How about that? Let's talk about a show you have seen. Go ahead and hit me with Flash Forward.
Okay, so before we start, because they had a recap episode. What do you remember of Flash Forward from the first half?
Everyone fell down. It was dark. And everyone saw their future. And except for the the partner who didn't see anything, so therefore he's going to die, and he gets the phone call that says you're going to die on March 15th. Oh, wait. That's now.
Huh. April 29th is when the all the events were flash-forwarded up to you, so we haven't gotten up to that yet.
Yeah, but his death, the partner's death, was supposed to be on March 15th.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Huh.
We didn't talk about that.
Well, yeah, his partner's death was supposed to, I remember that, and I remember that the wife cheated on the husband with the guy from the hotel, from the hospital, who also is part of the plan, who built the thing, and blah, 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 blah. And he did his big confession, very Caprica-like, in front of cameras, and confessed that he destroyed the world. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy's name is Lloyd Simcoe, and his partner is Simon. And Simon had a huge, huge role this week. Also, some of the stuff that I had totally forgot from the first part was that I really, really, really was into that Bryce and Keiko storyline. Bryce is the other doctor, the one who was going to commit suicide.
Oh, right,
and
right, right.
So it's his love interest, yes.
Yeah, he was looking for her. He went all the way to Japan, but she's actually here.
Well, they came back on the same plane and didn't meet. I was like, oh, this is so torturous. So, but again, we didn't get any of that either. What we got was a two-hour episode. A little backstory about this show. During the break, they lost two showrunners. So they're kind of, you know, were kind of worried that it was going to lose something, and the first hour kind of led into them losing something. So if you recall, Mark, that's the main character guy, his flash forward was kind of incomplete and all jumpy, because remember, he was like giving some testimony to Congress, and they were like, well, why is yours all fuzzy and everything, you know?
Oh, because he was drunk.
Yeah, so he went to see a therapist who gave him some special drugs that work like regression therapy, and now all of a sudden he has more images. So it's kind of like, oh, that's kind of how the new team is going to deal with stuff. It's like, if they can't figure out anything to do, they're just going to add scenes to people's flash forwards, and hey, look, there's this other stuff that you guys didn't see before.
Mm.
Yeah, that was kind of lame, and that sort of led to him finishing the big, because if you remember the end of the break, Lloyd gets kidnapped right in front of his kid, and Mark's wife is there, and, you know, and they just kind of jack Lloyd and drive off with him in an ambulance. So, do you remember the CIA agent from Japan, or from China?
Yeah.
The guy from The Wire, right?
The guy from The Wire? In China.
Yeah, I forgot too. I was like, oh, that's where I know him from. Anyway, that guy has now joined the FBI, our FBI team. And Mark is like on suspension. He's not on the team anymore. So him and John Cho's character, the CIA guy and John Cho's character, started looking for Lloyd. And they did all this stuff, all episodes, looking for this guy. And they thought they found him. All they had found was a bomb that blew up on him. They didn't get nothing. Mark, meanwhile, used his special new sights from his flash forward that he hadn't remembered before, and he actually found Lloyd. So he ended up
Hold up one question. Wait. One question. Isn't he suspended from the FBI, if I recall correctly?
Yes. Okay. Yes. He didn't use any FBI stuff. He actually went to his boss and asked him, hey, can I help you find him? And he's like, I'm trying to get you back on, but, you know, I mean, you're like firing a weapon in public. It's going to be really tough. but he used his flash forward, and he did find him. Because he remembered that he was talking to someone on the phone, and it turned out to be Lloyd. So remember in Lloyd's flash forward, he's like getting off the phone and he looks up and sees Mark's wife. He was talking to Mark. And they're talking. He's saying, I wish when I smashed through that eight ball that you were behind it. That's what Mark was telling Lloyd. So they were being Simon also got kidnapped. So they both were being held in this this abandoned restaurant, and spray painted outside was this huge graffiti of an ink ball. That's how he found it. He smashed his car through, you know, did his little kung fu, all the guys in there, ended up rescuing everybody. It was great. Yeah, doing that, look, but before that, Simon lost a finger.
What?
Yeah, and basically, they were the people that kidnapped them are the people that caused the blackout. They said it right there that they caused the blackout, and they already knew that Lloyd and Simon didn't cause it, but they amplified it. So what they had kidnapped them for is to find out, what did your experiment do? What were the parameters? How big was it? What happened? So we can basically do it again. turns out, that guy that was talking all that stuff, he's Simon's uncle. This we find out in the second half. The second half is all about Simon. Simon goes with Janice. Remember Janice? That's the lady, the FBI agent. And she's kind of, after, you know, Simon got kidnapped, because he's working with the FBI now, she's supposed to watch him, and he kind of got away from her and went to go see his family, met up with the villain dude was there too. Apparently, Simon was the guy in the stadium that's like on the camera that was walking around.
Yeah, and he's got the ring.
Exactly. They gave him a ring, and the ring allowed him to be awake during the blackout. And they took it away too after they gave it to him. Yeah, so you find out a lot about Simon in that episode. His mom said that he got picked on when he was a kid, but he always gets people back. So at the end of the episode, when he's like confronting his uncle, like, why are you doing all this? And basically his uncle would say, hey, we needed you to cause this blackout. So guess Simon's actually involved a little bit more. He doesn't know who his uncle was working for, but he didn't care. Because he was like, well, you know, you did all this stuff to me. I'm picking you out. He, like, pushed him down, and I guess the guy had emphysema. And he kind of just pressed on his chest until he killed him.
Oh, who had the vision of somebody choking him to death?
Okay, since Simon was awake during the blackout, he didn't have a flash forward. So when you see him choking somebody, that's what happened right after they told him... just before he got the ring, he was at his father's funeral. And during the blackout, when he was talking to the villain guy basically said, yeah, we killed your father. So what? And he walked off. And there was another guy there. And I guess since he couldn't kill that villain guy right then, he just grabbed that guy and just murdered him. And he said, oh, good. Now I have something to tell people. When people ask me if I have a flash forward, I'll just tell them about this. So his flash forward was actually a flash present.
Wow, that's recreative history.
It's really good. It was pretty good, yeah. So you find out that Charlie is a ruthless jack.
Well, you already knew that. But what's weird is, what's actually worrisome about the show, because the ratings actually were not very good for flash forward, And it's because of, unfortunately, people like me, which is, I watched the whole show before the break, and then when it came back, my TiVo recorded it, but I didn't hit the play button. I didn't really have that inclination to find out what happens next. I mean, now that you've told me all this stuff, that it sounds really exciting, and I probably will now watch it. But... it's really hard to... I don't even understand why television network executives do this anymore, or why they do this at all, which is they break shows up. So the show is like a hit, and you've got the rhythm, and everybody's watching it every week, and then you take it off the air for like 4 months, and then you expect people to jump back in, and it doesn't work that way. Like, I'm worried about V, because V comes back in like 2 weeks, or a week, 2 weeks, I think, and...
Mm-hmm.
It's been off the air for almost 6 months, I think. It was November. Not quite 6 months.
I think it all comes down to economics. I think what they're doing is they're buying like half the show, and they kind of want to see if it's worth finishing it all out. So you're like, here, make this much, and then we'll see how it does. But by the time you know how it does, you have no shows, so you have to go make some more.
Yeah.
What did it for me for Flash Forward was the recap show. You know, see, I'm a Lost veteran, so I always watch the recap show. Like, oh, yeah, there was a lot of cool stuff that happened. And it doesn't seem so boring because they smashed it all in 1 hour. There's a recap episode of V coming on this week, so we'll have to make sure we watch it.
Yeah, but V was only 4 episodes. Like, really? You think you forgot everything that happened in the 4 episodes? Like, I can see the recap for Lost because that's way too complicated. And I can see the recap for Flash Forward because it was like, what, I don't even know if we got 13 episodes. We maybe got 10 or 11 episodes, so that makes sense to do a recap. But 4 episodes, okay, the aliens landed. However, I am excited. I'm really excited about V. Like, I can't wait for that to come back.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean...
We just want to see Morris Chestnut.
There is that. I do like me some Morris Chestnut, but I actually like... The Captain, not Captain Jack, oh my God. I meant to say Father Jack, the preacher guy.
The guy from 4400?
Oh yeah, I loved him on 4400, and I was very excited that he got the lead on this big show. And what I find really interesting is they've maintained the fact that he's a very religious person, a very religious character, and... they still have put him in the middle of a very dangerous situation, and sometimes he's ill-equipped, and sometimes he just, you know, kind of does the best he can. And I really like the relationships that they're forming between him and the FBI woman from Lost. Man, I forgot my character's names. Maybe I do need to watch the recap. Actually, I'd rather just watch those 4 episodes again. I think that would actually... I'll have, like, a mini marathon and just watch those 4 episodes again. But, I like the dynamics on that show. I was so sure I was going to hate the whole single mother and her obnoxious, rebellious son. And there are some aspects of the obnoxious, rebellious son that I find annoying. But I do kind of like where they're going. And I love the little reveal where you find out that Anna's daughter is the girl that's trying to recruit him. And I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. You know, it's just, you know, she's so devious. And, you know, her daughter is learning at her mother's, you know, knee. And what trips me out about Anna is she's really beautiful and she's really charming. But there's this creepiness to her gaze that I find it amazing that no one else, like, see. Like, you're watching her give these messages. It's like, we come in peace, always. But she's got this... there's something underneath that that's really creepy to me. And I don't know if it's because my knowledge of... I know that she's really a lizard underneath there and she really wants to eat everyone. But I think it's the actress. I'm going to give Marina the benefit of that because she just has this... There's something sinister underneath that charming smile that freaks me out. Which means she's doing a great job, because I would have never thought that she could play a convincing villain. But she's fantastic.
Wait till she eats the guinea pig.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm like, that's the scene I think that everybody is waiting for. I don't know if they're actually going to give it to us, but I can guarantee you that everyone is waiting for that scene. I just know that even if they don't do it, she's doing a really good job of just scaring the crap out of me.
Yeah, people are waiting for that. They're waiting for the V baby, and we got to see the Beastmaster on here at least once.
The what? What was the last thing?
Mark Singer, come on.
Oh, as like a guest star, he just stumbles through a scene. I could do without the V baby. Like, I thought the V baby was a mistake. So if they actually watch the series, then they should avoid the V baby at all costs. Because that.
Not the human V baby. Green V baby.
Oh, I thought you meant the half breed. You're not talking.
No.
Yeah, that was
everybody. When that happened, everybody the next day at school. That's all they thought. Like, did you see what crawled up out of there? Oh my gosh.
And that was a cool thing because like V was on when I was in school, which is probably telling everyone how old both of us are. But I remember that was what everybody was talking about, you know, because V became like it was a big event. If you didn't watch it, you couldn't go to school the next day, you know. So I'm excited that they're doing a really good job with the new series, and I mean, what scares me a little bit is because it's been off the air. That was my whole rant before. Because it's been off the air for so long, it was a hit. You know, everybody was watching it. And I'm afraid that when it comes back, everybody's not necessarily going to be watching it. So I'm really, really, you know, cross my fingers. And Chuck had a hit in the ratings as well this week because they're blaming it on daylight savings time, which I'm hoping is correct. So, you know, when they go down in the ratings, I get nervous. And this season, you know, my show Lie to Me, they're not putting that back on until June, which is not good. That was one of my favorite new shows, and I haven't had a chance to talk about it because it hasn't been on for so long. So
that's why all good shows have come on cable stations.
That I agree with you to some extent on that. I wanted to talk about 30 Rock a little bit, but you, of course, don't watch that either. It makes this a very singular conversation. 30 Rock was pretty good. It's pretty funny. They did the whole NBC is actually being bought by Comcast, or did just get bought by Comcast. So on the show, they have NBC being bought by Cabletown with a K. And they talk about the fact that Cabletown doesn't actually make anything. Because they used to work for, you know, GE, and GE made things. And Cabletown doesn't make anything. They make all their money on pay-per-view porn. I'm not sure what kind of comment they're trying to make about Comcast, but I find it funny anyway. So they make... The thing I like about the show is anything that happens in real life for them, they reflect it on the show. And they do it in a funny way.
We should have a Leno O'Brien kind of a thing coming up?
They might have commented on it. I'm trying to remember. I don't remember them actually making that comment, but they usually do a pretty good job of anything that's happening in the news. They have their 5 cents about it. What was great was Tina Fey's character, Liz Lemon, she went to the dentist, got anesthesia, and some kind of way she put in her phone future husband. And she calls this guy, because she doesn't have any idea who he is, and she tracks him down, and he's like, why is your number in my phone as future wife? And so they think that Destiny is trying to tell them something, because they keep running into each other, and they go out on a date, and it's awful. It's like they do not click at all. Like, they actually hate each other. And then they run into each other again, and then they're like, well, maybe that's fate, let's try it again, and it goes just as badly. So then they're like, screw it, let's never see each other. And then they run into each other again. And so the guy is like, well, maybe this is God telling us we need to settle. which is a pretty interesting interpretation, and I thought that was pretty funny. And Liz is like, no, I can do better than you. And he's like, he's like, you know where to find me. He's like, I bet you I'll see you in May for sweeps. And she looks at him, and he goes, you know, like when you sweep the chimney. That's what we say in England.
Oh, God.
I was like, it's pretty. They're really tongue-in-cheek. And they kind of talk to the audience straight up, which is what I love about the show. All right, so okay. Let's talk about something I know you've watched, which is Caprica, right?
Woohoo!
All right. Caprica, hit me. What did you think of this week's episode?
Well, I guess the buzzword for this week's episode is going to be brown shorts moments. There were so many in this episode. You know what I mean?
Brown short moments? What do you mean? I don't know what that means.
Oh, man. It was like, oh, my God, is he going to set his daughter on fire?
Yes, and
I...
Now I understand your reference. You, first of all, But I actually, this episode actually highlighted to me how much of a crappy father Greystone is. Because I actually, I kind of thought it, but I never really thought about it until Zoe was like, I don't trust him. And I was like, well, why don't you trust him? And she's like, well, he freaking put me in this machine body because he thought it would be help him with his contract. And I was like, oh, yeah, he did do that. And I was like, yeah, well, that is a crappy thing for a father to do. I was like, okay, I can see that. And she's like, do you think, she's like, what kind of experiments do you think he would do to me if he knew I was in here? And I was like, oh, that's a very good point. And so
I think he's really, really conflicted because he knows, because he's so invested in avatars and all that, all of the holoband technology, he knows that there's no way that she is actually his daughter. And he doesn't believe in the everlastingness of the soul. So he knows that there's no way that that's his daughter. That's the way he looks at it. But then on another level, like you said, but you're all I got. So he wants it, but not like a real person, more like a doll. That's kind of what it is. He just wants to, I've got just this little bit left of Zoe. That's sort of enough.
Right.
I don't know how sinister it is, or like you know, it started off sinister, but maybe he's changing, and I guess we won't find out until he actually is for sure.
Well, I mean, you could say he's changing, but like you said, he freaking lit her on fire. Knowing that was her childhood trauma, he set her on fire to see if she would react. And
oh yeah, he's raw.
I'm like, dude, how is that helping to get her trust? Because it really isn't.
Yeah, he's right now. He's just trying to get some kind of reaction because it's still theory, and he's still treating it like a science experiment. He's like, well, if I could just see that she's in there. And he's also thinking, again, this is not her. He can't actually set her on fire. Like, and hey, I loaded the gun with blanks. She can't actually shoot the dog.
Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I didn't know. I was like, is he going to shoot the dog for real? Like, I was freaking out about that, too. I had that. I was like, how are they going to avoid shooting the dog? Because I was like, they're not going to shoot the dog, right? I was significantly worried about that. Because then the dog...
That was so mean to have the dog yelping.
Oh, man. That you're right. That really did hurt my feelings. But the other storyline that I have to say was really good was the Adama one. I liked...
Up to a point.
The point where I had problems was when he talks to his brother and he's like, how do you kill people? And he goes, I imagine it's a game. And I was like, you mean like the game that he was in the frickin' first place? And he couldn't shoot anybody and it was a game? I was like, are you kidding me? And then his brother tells him that advice and now he's fine.
I know. I was rolling my eyes. I mean, I actually saw the back of my head. Oh, this is so bad. He's so weak. I'm serious. Bill Adama has got to be adopted. I got to find out who his real dad is.
Yeah, because I was like, are you sure? Because if Sam wasn't gay, I would be like, Sam must really be his father.
It's got to be, because Joseph is so weak. Oh, it's maddening.
Because that was
when he got burly at the end. I was like, I still don't buy it.
Well, see, the thing that tripped me out was I assumed he could use a gun because he was a Tauron. So when you get to the part where he doesn't know how to use a gun, I was like, are you kidding me? You're a Tauron. And then the woman was like, I thought Taurons had more stones than you. And I was like, exactly. So yeah, he came off a bit weak, and that whole conversation was like, how do you kill people? How do you do it? How do you brace yourself? I was like, dude, you're playing a video game. If you can't kill somebody in a video game, I got nothing for you. And I almost...
Liza Minnelli guy better.
I was like, who? I was like, oh, you mean the cross-dressing dude that wanted to play riddles. Yeah. I'm wondering who the girl is. The girl that's his bodyguard. Because she said it, I think, twice, that the avatar he's looking at is not what she really looks like. And that he has no idea who she's like in the real world. And I was like, who is she in the real world? So now I kind of want to know.
I think it's his law office buddy that he can't he's making her get him coffee.
I was thinking that too. That is the first thing that occurred to me. I don't know if they're going to go there, but that is something I thought of. But I still am interested in that storyline, even though Joseph Adama is a complete wimp. I find Tamara's character really interesting, and I find that world kind of interesting. So I do definitely...
Keanu Tamara?
What'd you say?
You mean Keanu Tamara?
Oh. Yes, she is the Matrix version of Tamara. I do really find that interesting because, you know, I like the Matrix, so, okay. I want to know what's going on with that story. However, the story that I could care so less about, there are no words, is the wife and her dead brother's ghost and Clarice. I don't like Clarice so much. She's the only adult on the show that I cannot stand the sight of. The teenagers, I don't like them either, but Zoe, actually, I like Zoe when she's not with her friend. Like, when Zoe is with the adults, she's fine. It's when Zoe is with other teenagers that I find her annoying. But Clarice, I find her annoying no matter who she's with. I don't care if
she's
with...
The only thing that doesn't bother me about Clarice is she, to me, is our best connection to the overall mythology of Battlestar. I mean, she's gonna tell us what God is. If we see Baltar and Six, they're gonna come to Clarice or Grace Jones' wife. So that storyline seems to me that's gonna lead to connect us back to the grand mythology. So that's the only reason I put up with that. So I want to know the big questions.
I don't know. I don't. There's something about it that just doesn't work for me. And I understand what you're talking about because she's always talking about God, and she obviously sees a plan that we don't see yet. And I get that, but I don't care at this point. They haven't made me invest in that story. There's nothing in plot-wise that's interesting, and they need to do something to that and to make it interesting. And I think that's what they were trying to do with the dead brother, and it's just not working. It's just falling straight flat on its face. But the whole storyline with the revenge plot by the guy, Tomas Burgess, thank you. Woo! Pull that name. That whole revenge storyline is fantastic. Like, he's scary, but in a really kind of cool, you think he's justified kind of way. I mean, he's totally not wrong with what he's doing. Because basically, Greystone's totally gotten away with murder. And he's determined not to let that happen. And I'm like, all right. And you kind of want to cheer for him. You kind of want to cheer for the guy. But because we're seeing everything through Greystone's perspective, you're a little bit scared. So, and I like the fact that Greystone, you want to like him, sort of, but he's a little bit evil. And,
oh, he's totally evil.
I wasn't going to say totally. He's not totally evil, but he is a little bit evil. But then again, is that what they're saying, that all, like, big business guys have to be a little bit evil to become really successful? You got to be a bit cutthroat? But, I mean, there's a difference between being cutthroat and willing to kill people. And he is definitely willing to kill people.
And betray even his closest family. I mean, he's got the evil thing down.
Yeah, but he does it in a way that you're not like... Okay, the difference, I almost want to compare it a little bit to, like, The Shield, because in The Shield you had Vic Mackey, and he was definitely evil, but you saw everything from his perspective, so you could cheer for him. However, when the show was ending, my thing is I wanted Vic Mackey to die or go to jail. Like, I was like, he cannot get away with everything that he's done in this series without some repercussions. And I'm not quite sure I feel the same way about Greystone. I mean, I don't feel like he has to die, and I don't feel like he necessarily has to go to jail, which is weird, but I think mainly it's because he's managed to avoid doing those things himself for the most part. And
that
I'm
makes
not
it worse.
Yeah, I know, that actually does make it worse. And now that I think about it and say it out loud, yes, that does make it worse. But there's something about him that I still do find interesting and charming and all of that. So
I think his saving grace is that he hasn't outright said, go kill this guy. Like Joseph Adama did.
Yeah, but when Joseph Adama did it, I didn't believe him. You know, and so that's the difference. Like, if Greystone gave the order to kill somebody, he's not taking it back. You know,
right.
he basically, once he makes a decision, it's done, and he does it. Joseph Adama, you're right, is coming off as a punk. He's very much like, he makes a decision, and he changes his mind, and he changes his mind again, and then he gets depressed, and I'm like, stop being a drama queen.
Yeah.
All right. Whoa, did you see the preview for next week? For the finale?
Yes, that's the finale.
Yes, that finale looks like it's going to give us pretty much everything we've been waiting for. So I'm
even fast forwarded up to next week and saw that it's going to be called End of the Line. So they might get something about the train.
Or they could be talking about code, End of Line.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It is End of Line, not End of the Line.
So I think that's more computer code, but... well, that, and I just watched Tron this week, so that's why I'm thinking that. They look like they're going in a really good direction at this point. I really had my doubts up to this point, but I'm a little bit excited now. I mean, I really think that for the most part, I'd say 60 to 70% of the stories they have going on are working. I think 30% are not, and I wish they would drop those. But maybe this finale will give them a chance to course correct. I'm really hoping that when we get to the finale, the stuff that doesn't work either comes to a conclusion or kind of drops out. And I hope that they have the vision to see what's working and not working. Usually, Ron Moore impresses me that he can see it. Like, he'll put something out there to see if it works, and if it doesn't work, he's like, oh, you know, I tried it, which I do respect. But he usually can see when stuff is not working, and I'm hoping that he sees what's not working on this show, too. Some of it is, and I feel like they've done some good course correction. And I'm just hoping that they finish to where I can enjoy 100% of the story versus 70% of the story. You know?
Yeah. Since they're getting a spinoff, so I guess they're safe for now. They'll have time to finish telling what they're telling.
Well, yeah, and they split the season, so... They already finished shooting all the episodes of season one, but we're not going to get the second half until, like, the end of the summer, I think. Something like that. This is, again, with my complaint about people breaking shows up, which I find really annoying. Because they actually, there's no excuse about, you know, we wanted to save money. They shot all 22 episodes at the same time. They just are splitting the season, because Sci-Fi likes to spread out their season in bizarre ways, which... Like, again, I said, annoys me.
I think their thing is that they only want to show shows on Friday, so Stargate's coming back, so they gotta move some.
No, they have shows, they tried to have Tuesday or whatever day, and I think the problem was they didn't quite have enough shows for it. But you know what? Why not show a full season of whatever show, and then show the full season of whatever show, because they split up Stargate. Stargate, they showed 10 episodes, and then they put it on break, and now they're showing the next 10 episodes. I'm like,
yep.
Can we just see the whole season, please? But this is my rant. I should be calm. One last thing with Spartacus. Do you watch that?
Oh, yes.
Ah, yay! this week's episode of Spartacus was was actually pretty good. The machinations...
Yeah, I've been waiting for the Olympia scene, because they've been teasing it for a long time.
I don't get the previews, because I watch it on Netflix.
I know. I'm just saying. I've been waiting because the way her and Xena, I don't remember her name, have been kind of dancing around each other. I was like, okay, come on.
I think she's more teasing her. I really don't think she's sexually interested in her. I mean, they did the kiss, but neither one of them seemed particularly interested. I think it's more of Xena. Forgot her name on here, too. I think it's more of her exerting her power.
The way that Olympia was looking at Crixus. That's what I'm saying. She was definitely gonna, because ever since she saw that one dude, the blonde guy, I knew she is gonna totally get down with one of those gladiators.
Yeah, and she was like, no one has Crixus but me and my maid, which of course she doesn't know about, but whatever. But yeah, that other, I felt a little bad for the noble woman that I don't know her. What was her name? Icenia. How do you remember these names? I only remember the names of gladiators.
3 years of Latin.
But I felt a little bad for her, but when she started giggling and laughing at her, I was like, nah, you're not going to make it. I knew that there was going to be a problem.
That was such a sweet switcho changeo.
Well, because, yeah, they led the audience to believe that it was, and they conveniently had those masks on. But only thing I find hard to believe, Crixus and Spartacus don't look alike in the body shape.
Right.
Crixus is like 10 times thicker than Spartacus is. And he's darker. Well, I mean, they had the paint on, so the paint could account for that. But Crixus is a bigger guy. He's a much bigger guy. And you would think that a woman that was obsessing about sleeping with him would notice that.
She was only looking at one area, right in the middle.
That is true. That is true. But I like...
What's up with the gold member thing? What's up with that?
I don't understand with why they painted people gold. I don't, because I think it was supposed to be a statue and they were supposed to be imitating the gods. But it was basically they were trying to do the whole brothel thing. You know, the noble woman pays for sleeping with the gladiator, and they got switcherooed. And I love the look on Spartacus's face when he realized who he had just been having sex with. He was like, "What?" And he was, because he hates her. Well, they hate each other. And I do remember, like, originally the hate was about he hated the husband. But I never understood why the wife hated him so much. Like, I didn't get that. I didn't understand why she...
Lord Rao.
Oh, that is Lord Rao. Oh, my God. I was wondering why I recognized him. That's great. We got no Lord Legend of the Seeker this week. Well, that's why he's not on the show, because he's always on Legend of the Seeker. So he's not on this show. That does.
Yes.
Both shows shoot in like New Zealand, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the only reason I say that because I noticed that a lot of the extras have New Zealand accents that they're trying to hide under British accents, and I was like, I can hear your New Zealand accent underneath there. So
yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they film in the same place because there's a lot of like extras and just the look. Crixus is supposed to be the undefeated Gaul, and I was like, no, he looks like he's from New Zealand. You know, so because there's a lot of people who look like Pacific Islanders there, and that's what he looks like to me.
Did you catch the Evil Dead scene?
Evil Dead.
Sam Raimi was the director on Evil Dead, and you know.
Was it the scene where he wanted that thing off his leg?
No. After, like, Kina gets her head smashed in, did you notice her eye was hanging out? And I was like, oh, totally from Evil Dead.
Well, I her face looked like a big bloody mess, so, sure.
In the shot where they're, like, going back, where she's, like, laid on the blood, it's kind of flowing out, so it's just hanging. It's really gross.
Well, I'm really happy that they got Crixus back to full shape. You know, like... Because I didn't like Crixus all laid up and cut up with his guts out, and now he's back to being a gladiator, and he's almost at 100%. I know those brothers are going to be a problem, but I actually think the brothers are going to end up uniting Crixus and Spartacus, because Spartacus owes Crixus his life, and so he's not going to let those brothers kill, you know, Crixus, like, in his sleep or something. That's not going to happen.
Right.
And so I actually like the little bits of intrigue and little bits of things that are making them become a team against their will, kind of. And I want more Doctori. That's all. Doctori is fantastic. I need more him. I need him to do more something. I don't care if it's him pulling out his bullwhip and whipping somebody. I don't care if it's what, I don't care what it is. I love Doctori.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'm trying to figure out, because, you know, Spartacus is going to free the slaves, and, you know, he'll need a crew. So I'm trying to figure out all of the gladiators that are going to be on the crew.
Well, I mean, he can count on his, what's his blonde friend's name? Like, oh, that, I just said I knew all the gladiators. I should know that guy. I can't think of his name. But I like him, too, even though he had the
blonde
gall,
guy.
The blonde guy, even though he had the gall to call his wife a whore. I was like, really? She got raped and you call her a whore? Are you kidding me? So, yeah, he lost a lot of... Because before, I really liked him. He's one of my favorite characters. And after that, I was like, I think I'm done with you. But the show is... I mean, it's brutal. It's got a lot of nudity. And even though I thought they went with the heavy on the women nudity this week... Last week, it was heavy on the male nudity. This week, it was insanely heavy on the female nudity. But... It still has plot, it's got intrigue, it's got, you don't know who to cheer for, you know, because everyone's evil.
He's well, like, we'll tie this over while waiting for Sookie to come back.
Oh, you mean for True Blood?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, it's not quite the same show. I mean, okay, granted, True Blood has a lot of blood and has a lot of violence and it has a lot of nudity. But it's not, I hadn't thought about that connection before. It's not quite as, Spartacus is way more on all of those. Like, it has way more. And I actually think some of their intrigue is a little more interesting. And part of it is because True Blood, I've read the series up to book 8. So I already know most of what's going to happen. So I'm like, come on, hurry up. That's kind of how I feel when I'm watching True Blood. I'm a little impatient to get to the good stuff. Because the first two seasons is just preamble. This book series is fantastic, but it takes, you know, I'm already past the warm-up. I'm at the wars that are going on. Like, in the series, I mean, there's full-out wars going on, and they haven't gotten to that on the TV show. So I'm kind of like, hurry up. Let's get to the good stuff.
Yep, you're preaching to the choir. Don't have to convert me. I'm there.
Have you read the books?
No, because I want to see it all first, and then I'll read the good stuff later.
Because they're doing some stuff a little out of order, like the stuff at the when that bomb went off, and all those guys were there, and the bomb goes off, like that was slightly incorrect. Like it was supposed to be a bigger bomb at a hotel, like that hotel where they were all hanging out at. Or in the books, the bomb goes off in the hotel. And all the kings and queens are all there. Because there's like this huge meeting. And so all the kings and queens of about a bunch of districts are all there and when the bomb goes off. And it changes the power structure of the vampires because it kills so many people. So they did the same thing in a big group of vampires, but it didn't have the same political effect. And it introduced the same character, like the bellhop guy who's a telepath. He gets introduced in that same story. But in the books, when the hotel blows up and they're looking for survivors, they're going through the rubble trying to find survivors, her and that guy, the bellhop guy, together find the survivors. And so, like, they didn't do that. And so I'm like, all right. Well, it's like they're doing some of the stuff, they're not doing everything. So it's kind of irritating because I want the stuff to the really good stuff to happen, and there's some of them they're not doing. However, they have made Lafayette into the best character ever because in the books he dies in book one, and he's not that interesting, and in the TV show he's fantastic. So yeah. I have to give them credit for that. Like some of the stuff really works. Bill doesn't work.
Because
Bill doesn't work in the books. Bill is a crappy character that Sookie figures out is a jerk by the end of book two. She figures out he's a jerk and she dumps him. And because he's such a popular character on the show, I'm like, man, she's not going to dump him, is she? So I'm kind of frustrated by that because I can tell they're going to keep him. But
I guess I'll become a polygamist and get with both of them.
Well, I was about to say, we've hit the hour mark, so I'm going to have to cut this podcast short. Any final remarks?
No, I'm all set.
Well, thank you for being my guest this week. I appreciate it. And if you guys out there have any comments, remember you can send your comments, feedback to tvcampfire@gmail.com. See you guys next week.